Hey guys, I'm Val.
And I'm Luke.
And this is Raw Crimes, your new favorite podcast.
We're sitting down every week and diving into some of the craziest known and unknown cases true crime has.
So settle in, grab a drink, and join us.
Hola. Hello.
We're back. All right. So tonight we're back for our, fourth episode now? Fourth full episode.
Yep. We've got one mini under our belt. Got to pump one of those out.
Yeah.
Got to work out the, what's the saying? Like work out.
Like the kinks?
Kinks. Work out the kinks. Something about edges, right?
Oh, like smooth out the edges?
Smooth out the edges.
Rough.
Yeah, we're trying to make a circle here.
Yeah, we're just trying to figure everything out.
You know, like, just building up to recording this, I've just been trying to, like, get as much energy for this just because yesterday just killed me.
Yeah, and also,
I'm so exhausted.
What killed me was Iris running around this room just now. Watching her made me tired.
Oh, yeah. I mean, why can't she be, like, Sunny? Why can't she be more like Sunny? Just getting in a little basket.
He's in the basket with our where we keep like one of our throw blankets. He just sleeps in there.
I was gonna tell you earlier when I first saw him in there, I was like, it looks like a the crane, how they bring a baby in like a little blanket.
Yeah.
It looks like that. Like the crane was carrying the basket and just dropped him off here.
Yeah.
He just looks so at home there. But yeah, no, I was looking at my body and just all the. I mean, it looks like I went through a fucking war, honestly. Like, you don't have to deal with this because you've got nicer skin than me. But, like, I don't know if you've seen, but I've got, like, little pimples or whatever. Like, that little rash that I get from the sun.
Yeah, but that's, like, a sun thing, I guess.
Yeah, but, like, if my skin hasn't been exposed to the sun for long enough, like, I have to gradually tan so I won't get this. But if I get burnt once from some extreme sunlight, I just get this really bad rash, and I got it last time we were in Cancun.
Yeah, we went on a pretty grueling hike yesterday. It took, like, I don't even know how long it took. A really long time.
I mean, it didn't take that long. It was from 11, and we got back at, 3 or 4?
Yeah, I guess just with driving, like, because it was, like, a two-hour drive-ish one way.
Yeah.
And then the hike was, like, 10-some miles.
Yeah. What was your favorite part?
My favorite part?
Yeah, we're pulling a Dora the Explorer. What was your favorite part of it?
Getting like 6 different drinks at the gas station afterwards because we were so dehydrated because we definitely did not bring enough water.
Yeah. I mean, we brought a good amount of water, 2 Hydro Flask worth.
Yeah. It's like, it's a good amount. But at the same time, like I told you this when we were like halfway done with the hike, I was like, I drink like 3 of these a day, so this is not enough.
Yeah. I mean, we were definitely feeling the effects. Like, right, we were at the summit when we took our last sip.
Yeah.
We brought 2 of those Hydro Flasks, and then we also brought a vitamin water.
Vitamin, yeah.
And we just downed all of it when we were at the summit. And this is when like the sun is at its, not its highest, but it's super hot out.
Kind of, though. It was like 1 p.m.
Yeah, it was beating down on us. But, yeah. I mean, Val, you had a new experience that yesterday, right? When we got back to the car, you're extremely thirsty.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we left at like 7:30 a.m. Because it was a 2-hour drive from where we live.
Mm-hmm.
And we stopped by Whole Foods on the way to get like wraps and sandwiches and stuff
for sustenance to keep us alive on the hike
and some cold brews. And we were like, oh yeah, we picked out the vitamin water, and you're like, you know what, let's get another water bottle, like, because we'll definitely need it for when we get back to the car.
I had a feeling, like, I don't know if you said this. I don't know if you were like, another water, like, we've got enough.
I didn't think of, yeah, I didn't think,
but
I
felt like I was getting that look from you, but I was like, it's always nice to have some extra water around.
Yeah, definitely.
Even though that wasn't extra, that was much needed. Thank you very much.
Yeah, except we left it in the car, didn't even think to like put it in the glove box or in the trunk or anything. Not that that would have helped too much, I don't think, because we were gone for like a few hours, so it still would have heated up. But it was
like tea water.
It was
that hot.
It was hot. I opened it and I felt like this hot air like and I still chugged it, and it was not satisfying at all. I was still really dehydrated after.
It's like when you pour yourself some tea and then you let it sit because it's too hot to drink from boiling when it was boiling. But then it's at that nice temperature where you're like, oh, it's going to like warm me up inside in this cool office or this cool apartment. But no. Like,
except you're chugging it.
Yeah. We're just chugging the scalding hot water.
We drank it, and like, it was the weirdest feeling I've ever experienced. And we drank it in like a minute, like before we got out of the parking lot, it was done.
Yeah. I'm just never going to forget. I feel like it's always the end of the hike that's the worst, because you have nothing exciting to get back to except for some AC. You just want it to
be over. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this. It was like the four stages or the four obstacles.
Horsemen of the apocalypse.
Yeah. The shit of the hike. The shit we had to go through just to get back. So the first part down was like some parts were man-made, and it was just also like hilly, just steps downward.
It was just downhill the whole time. It was terrible.
And it hurt our knees like a mother effer. But
in my like big toes, like the nail, like I have like cut nails because like, I don't have long nails, but I just kept sliding forward like in my running shoes.
You sure you don't have, you sure so you don't keep them long? No. Just in case you need to fight someone off.
No, and I just kept like sliding forward in my shoes every time I would go down, and like halfway through like that first part, I was like, holy shit, like my nails are hurting so bad right now.
Yeah, I mean, I showed you, I've got bruises on my one toe because I kept stepping on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was just the stairs and then what, the fire road?
Yep, and then we finally got to the fire road. We were made to believe that it was like, it definitely was, like some lady was saying like on the way there, there was a bunch of people there too. Like we have to stop every once in a while because there'd be like a hard pass coming up and we have to wait for everyone to get through.
Yeah. And don't bring your kid on that hike. Please Old don't. Rag, Old Rag Mountain in Virginia. Do not bring your kid because it'll slow the.
He'll hold up like 20 people behind him.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one lady, like she was talking about how on the way down, it's like not that bad. Like you just have to get through like a hike, but it's just all downhill. It's nothing hard. And it's like 0.8 miles. And then you get to the fire road. And we're like, oh, 0.8 miles. Like that's so quick. We'll be there in no time. And then it's just walking. Like,
yeah, no.
No, it took so long.
Any sort of incline or decline just kills you after that hike.
Mm-hmm.
And the fire road was just constant down and then up. It was like very brief moments of just flat ground where you're like, I could do this.
And then you turn the corner and it's just all downhill and you're like, fuck, this is gonna hurt.
So it's like the fire road was never ending. So we had the steps, the fire road, and then we made it to the end of the fire road.
2.5 miles the fire road was, or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was longer.
It felt longer than that.
Yeah, it felt longer.
And then we hit the chain fence. And that's just
and
a
the
little,
road.
That's just a big middle finger and like a slap to the face, because you think that you're close to the end. You see the chain fence and you're like, finally. Like,
and you see paved road. And you're like, oh my God, we're done.
But
that's
then
it.
But then this hike, for some reason, it's like, no, you can't walk on the road. Like, take this new route that we made. And it just adds another kilometer and a half. And so that's the third part.
And then half of it was just straight uphill. It literally was uphill. Like
we walked all the way down and then we had to walk all the way back up.
And then all the way back down to get to the parking lot.
It sucked. But then we finally made it to the parking lot. But like we said, there are four obstacles, because there's that parking lot and then there's the overflow parking lot. And so Val had to take a break, use the restroom, which was disgusting apparently.
It was worse than the porta potty that we used on the way there at that one gas station.
Yeah, when you'd rather use a porta potty than a built bathroom.
Yeah.
But the last part was the trek from the main parking lot to the overflow. That felt like forever. I'm sure it was like 10 minutes.
It was a lot quicker, though, than the straight uphill to get to the first parking lot.
Yeah.
But it was downhill still. And it hurt. It just hurt.
Moral of the story is they need to build water slides or what is it, ski lifts? Ski lifts. Once you're at the top, you should just be able to parachute down or something.
Yeah, we were just like, towards the end, I remember I was like half like jogging, half walking. Like I was like, I was taking the biggest steps. I just want this to be done.
I just wanted to lay on my belly and slide down. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm excited. I'm excited for this story.
It's, like I told you, it's a doozy.
Yeah, I saw that the Sharp family, and that reminded me of a friend's sister's husband. Their last name is Sharp, and she put her Instagram handle as the Sharpest Ham, and like they had a whole Sharpie thing for their marriage. Like that was a joke or a running joke going on. Mm-hmm. But when I saw Sharp family, I instantly thought of that. But screw that story. Let's get into it.
Yes. Well, like Luke said, I'm doing the Sharp family murders. But first, before I get into that, I wanted to talk about exactly the kind of case that we're talking about tonight, because it is a little bit different than your typical true crime story, I guess. Ooh. Like it's like in a league of its own, I would say.
Yeah, no, when you were writing it, like you were, multiple times I overheard you just like, oh my God, say, oh my God.
Yeah. What the heck? I made myself nauseous a couple of times just reading through this. Yeah,
that too. I was about to say that.
Yeah. It was rough. And that's just because, like, the nature of these kind of cases, like, especially this kind of case, is it feels very, like, it feels especially, like, heinous to me. So, anyways, let's get into it. The kind of case that I wanted to talk about tonight is a case that involves familicide. So, as you may have guessed from the term, familicide is defined as when, quote, one family member murders other members of their family, commonly taking the lives of all, and most often used to describe cases where a parent, usually the father, kills his wife and children, and then typically himself. And that was from crimetraveler.org. It's like a blog about stuff, like this kind of stuff.
Is that word in the dictionary?
Yes.
Familicide?
Yeah. It's like homicide, there's like infanticide, there's like different terms. I don't remember the terms for like killing, it's like patricide, killing your father, like siblings. It's a lot of those.
Ugh, God, I couldn't imagine, I don't know, not me killing anyone in my family, but just how could someone do that?
Yeah, and that's why.
Oh my God, like you grow up with them your entire life.
That's why like more and more this is being studied like more and more because it's just like the psychology behind it is just like unfathomable.
Yeah. And this isn't, does this have anything to do with that Unsolved Mysteries or that show that we were watching? Didn't they go over a family that where the dad killed all of the kids and all and the wife too?
Didn't they? What episode was that?
You
like, I know, I'm
one
sure
part
I'm
of it, one part of it was, I don't know if this is a spoiler alert, but he told the oldest son that was away, like, something's wrong with your mom, you need to come home now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was Unsolved Mysteries, right?
I think so. Hmm. I really don't remember it, but that was not, I can't.
Sharp family?
No. I can't even remember that episode, honestly, right now.
Just a coinkadinky, apparently.
Yeah. So, okay, some quick, like, stats and stuff like that about familicide, because it's just horribly fascinating. In a study published in the Howard Journal of Criminal Justice in 2013, they studied newspaper articles about familicide, and those were, those newspaper articles were studied from 1980 all the way to 2012. 83% of the perpetrators, so 51 people out of the 79 that had committed it, were male, and over half were between the ages of 30 to 40, like, years old.
So midlife crisis. So
something like that.
AKA buy a Camaro and, like, waste your money on that. Don't kill your entire family.
Yes. I wish you could say that to those people. Also, 57% of these cases occurred inside the family home. And then also 68% of the time, the perpetrator committed suicide afterwards.
That's actually really interesting. Yeah. I'd say the 57% of them occurring in the home. I feel like it should be more, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, it's either that or it's like they take them like camping, or it's like a car accident, like a something. It's something like that.
Oh, shit. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's not just like a random place. It's like, hey, let's go do this together. And then
I mean, I don't know if you found the statistic on this, but I'm sure a lot of them have to be a car accident.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the easiest way, but the thing is, like, how would you figure that out unless they left a note? Because a car accident is sometimes freak accident.
Yeah.
So
the only times, like, I think the only really times you can tell is if there was some kind of behavior leading up to it, maybe, or notes, or like sometimes you can tell at the scene of the accident. Like, I've heard of cases where like they could tell that the car didn't brake before going off, like wherever they did. So like, or it, they could show that it was like due to skid marks or something, it was accelerating, or it was stopped and accelerated. Like, it was stuff like that they can tell. But most times, I guess, I bet you couldn't.
Yeah. That's insane.
Scary.
I mean, it's a whole lot easier, in my opinion, than taking them out one by one.
Yeah, but the other stat that I found about this is a lot of times, like, more often than not, like, familicide happens in, like, very violent ways. It's not just getting rid... Like, it's something about... I don't know, like, the psychology behind it, but they do it... It's, like, oftentimes it's, like, stabbing, strangling, shooting.
What the fuck?
Yeah. It's very, very fucked up.
Do these people even love their family at all?
I don't know.
Do they
mean,
have some sort of unnatural hatred towards them?
I don't know. I don't know how you could love some, but like, as I mentioned, like later, like, so here's the thing. So the thing that about these men, that tend to commit familicide, it's typically men. That's why I'm saying men. It's not always men. It's
men are trash. Am I right?
A lot of times.
High five, Luke. Men are trash.
It's mothers. A lot of times it's mothers. But unlike other spree or serial killers, which like up until like the early 2000s or something like that, police like tended to include them in those groups. Like they just thought they were spree killers or something snapped or whatever. They often have no criminal history and have overall good backgrounds, and they have like good relationships with people. Like nobody saw it coming, you know, that kind of thing. Like family members of them saying like they had like a fine, like they had a perfect relationship, like the perfect family, like everything's just fine.
Yeah.
So
I'm trying to think about that right now. Like just the circumstances for that to happen.
Yeah.
And just I don't even know what I'm trying to say. Like
it's some kind of stressor.
I kind of understand why it's more middle class.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to explain it.
It's like, well, so I'm going to get into, there's four types of family annihilators, which is what the term coined to them.
I get to see which one I associate with.
Oh my God.
I'm just kidding. I could never harm Iris. She's too cute.
So the four family annihilators. So there's the self-righteous, the disappointed, the anomic, and the paranoid. All right. So the self-righteous, which is the most common type, that type often like blames the wife for a perceived breakdown of the family, and they will typically carry out familicide on important dates, which I thought was fascinating, like anniversary, holiday, first date. So one notable example, you can see a picture of him right below. That is the lovely Robert Farquharson.
Lovely.
Just kidding. Yeah, he is
God.
A piece of shit. He killed his three sons on Father's Day after his wife left him. And he actually did that in a car accident. And
all of them died?
All of them died. All of his three boys died.
God, what a piece of shit.
Yeah. So,
and there's nothing they could do about that.
No, that's your dad. Like, I didn't look into the case, but by all accounts, like, nobody saw it coming.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Do you know how? Like, do you know what the car accident was? Like, was it over a bridge into a tree?
I don't know. I saw a quick, like, YouTube video of the documentary because I wanted to see how to pronounce his last name because I wasn't sure.
That's, like, the most important thing to you.
Yeah, it is.
It's like, if you were a porter, like, you'd... I don't know. They'd be like, we're going live to Valerie Schwiegen. She's on the scene. You're like, the victim, Mark. I'm not going to say his name because I don't know how to pronounce it yet. It's spelt like that's the type of person you are. Like, you need to be completely right about it.
I do. I had to check like 3 different sources to make sure.
Oh my God. This is, if you're ever wondering if a Raw Crimes episode doesn't come out, it's because Val's trying to figure out how to pronounce their last name. We will not produce an episode that does not have a correct last name.
Yes, we will stake that on our reputation.
Yeah, no.
Or stake our reputation on that.
Yeah, that no, backwards. Fuck that, no. We're just, I'm joking. I'm joking like 80% of the time. Go!
It's a quick Google search. Anyways, yeah. So the next type is the disappointed family annihilator, and that's one who believes that they have done everything right for the family, but the family hasn't, and so they become disappointed, quote-unquote, by their families, and they resort to killing them because they feel that they just haven't been done right,
compensated enough,
like something, like they just feel like they're being let down by their family, like they're
what
not
are the kids supposed to do. Like, what, you look at the kids, you're like, you don't have a job yet, like
there
I'm
was
only 5.
Yeah, so that, well, that's, so that's the other thing. I saw like a couple of examples, so this from this website, I took these types, they're everywhere out there, but I mostly used an Australian website. It's called Stay at Home Mum.
Ooh. Yeah. We should use mom over here.
They had a really, like, a lot of great stuff on. They had a whole page on family annihilators, which I took a lot from, and it was
why does Australia have a lot of family annihilators over there?
No, I think it's just something kind of like a blog.
Something in the water in the outback that just makes them go crazy.
And so one example that they had used a couple of examples for each type. And for the disappointed family annihilator, they had, like, say, like, maybe, like, their son or their daughter or somebody came out as gay, or somebody disappointed them in this way. Or, like, there was one example, a man killed his daughters and his wife, and, like, he, like, burned the house down because they had become, like, either westernized or, like, different. Like, they were just different, like,
so they grew as people, yeah. And they didn't like the way that they grew,
exactly.
And so you can't just say, hey, I'm done with this, I'm not attracted to you anymore, or something like that. You gotta kill them.
Yeah, apparently
that's weak. That is so fucking weak. And then they, like, what was it, 60 some percent of the time they off themselves too?
67. Yeah, they usually go and kill themselves.
It's gonna be like the last episode when I was just getting angry at the end. Just like getting up, just walking around.
All right. Well, wait after these 2 more types.
Yeah.
All right. So the Anomic Family Annihilator, the third type, he usually links his family to their personal success or wealth, like to his success. And so if something should happen and this success is in jeopardy, or he's like maybe bankrupt or something, the killer sees no more function in the family and gets rid of them. Like, he doesn't see a use for them anymore.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it's these kind of distorted ways of thinking that just are.
What is going on through their freaking heads?
I don't know. That's why it's being studied more, because it's like, this is a type of killer. Like, this isn't someone who just like, and yeah, they do snap, I think, a lot of times. Like, something happens in their lives, like bankruptcy, loses their job, whatever it may be, but something snaps and they do this because they somehow like they somehow rationalize it in their heads that this is the only way out.
Okay.
Which is fucked up.
Oh my God. Like, what, you're bankrupt and you're thinking, I can't pay for a divorce, I might as well just end everyone here,
I guess.
Oh my God. If you're going to be that much of a baby, if you're going to kill your family, then off yourself. Have a little bit of decency and just off yourself. Like,
exactly. That's
take I out mean, a life insurance policy right before you do it and make it look like it wasn't suicide so your family gets it. Don't be a fucking dick.
It's crude to say for sure, but like, if you
I'm
get
a crude
to,
person.
No, no, I'm saying like, if you do get to this kind of stage in your life where you just feel it's hopeless and you really can't get help and you can't do this or that and you feel like there's no other way out, just take your life. Like, it's shitty to say, but do, like, why take your family with
okay,
you? What did they do
in these circumstances? Yes. Val's not saying
I'm not saying commit.
No, that's I know what you meant, but
There's no good way to phrase it. There's no good way to phrase it.
Okay, if you're thinking about killing your family and yourself, just kill yourself.
Yes. Do the But don't do either, preferably.
We like to think we're good people here on Raw Crimes, but just kidding.
All right. So
that was so funny.
I tried to tiptoe my way around.
Like, imagine in the future someone takes this out of context and they're
going to be canceled.
Yeah. cancel culture Val Schwiegen for saying that. If you're feeling bad, just kill yourself. Just do it. God. Do it. Don't listen to that Logic song. Don't. Okay. We're done. It's a bad joke.
All right. So lastly, the paranoid family annihilator sees that killing his family is the only way to protect them from some kind of perceived threat. So, like, for example, say, like, they're losing custody of their child or something, and the child might have to go, like, into foster care or something. They might think that they're saving them from that and by killing them. Or, like, they're saving, like, maybe they're getting divorced or something, and they're saving the kids from the pain of divorce. Like, they're saving these particular people from some kind of pain, from some kind of threat to their family.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot wrong in their head if that's where their head goes to.
Yeah.
Or that's where their thought process goes to.
For sure. How do you,
how do you go from, I don't want my kid to be sad for a little bit. And like, once they're older, they'll understand and they'll hopefully get over it. I want to say understand, but
you can help them get past it. There's,
yeah,
of course there's ways around it. Like,
oh my God,
there's ways to get around every single situation that doesn't involve killing your entire family.
You know what? I don't want to use the word pussy. Cat, I don't want to use that. So I'm going to use babies. These killers are babies. Yes. They are pathetic and they're babies. And they have small brains because they can't think. That's just
very
ridiculous.
Very smooth brain decision to kill your family.
That's it. That's it. I'm going to start using that. Hey, yo, smooth brain.
All right. So that's our little intro to the kind of case that we're going to be talking about today.
You got to have a bumpy brain to get that insult.
All right. So let's get into it.
I'm ready. Oh, wait. Yeah. Are you going to tell us later or are you going to tell us now what type of family annihilator the Sharp family is?
I'll tell you later, or I'll let you decide.
There's a quiz. Okay, yes. Class.
Yes, pay attention.
Wait. Just for the audience as well as me. Mm-hmm. What are the four again?
Okay, so the four are the most common, the self-righteous, where they think that their wife is to blame and they see some kind of breakdown of their family and they blame it on the wife, basically.
Okay.
Basically. So so that's the self-righteous. The disappointed self-annihilator, so he sees his family letting them down in some kind of way, like they see disappointment in their kids or their wives or something. The anomic family annihilator, who sees like his family as an extension of himself, of his like wealth, his success, and mm-hmm. so when that's threatened, he's like, I don't see a way out of it. Like, there was a really famous example of this was John List, who I actually thought about doing for this before because I knew I wanted to do a family annihilator.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, you seem really into them
because the psychology behind it is just,
they're very interesting. Yeah.
I don't understand.
I mean, when things don't just make sense for me, like when I hear about how people's thought processes are and I'm just like, I could do any fucking analysis and never get there.
Yeah.
That's when things are interesting.
And the thing about it is like, serial killers, yes, they are horrifying, and they're like, the psychology behind it is fascinating.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can usually trace it back to some kind of event or some kind of upbringing, or maybe it was something in their brains. Like, you don't know exactly, but you can somehow trace it back. But with these kind of people, like, it seems to be like one event out of a perfectly normal life mm-hmm. just leads them to this. So yeah. It's like how, like you can't, most of these people, you can't trace back to their childhoods. They have normal childhoods. They have normal friends. They have everything is fine. And then this, like, so that's the thing that's fascinating. But anyways, John List, I was thinking about doing him, a very, very, very famous case. But he killed his family because he basically was going bankrupt and he like saw no other way out of it. And to like hide his other family from the embarrassment, like he somehow rationalized it in his head that his family was tied to his success. And if he didn't have his family anymore, then like he could be fine without them. And like, it just, I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
That's why it's interesting.
Yeah. The Anomic family annihilator sees like no more use in his family basically.
Yeah.
And also he probably sees them like, I had you guys when I was like at this high point of my life, but now I'm like approaching this low point and now I don't see you in it anymore. I don't know. It's weird. And then the last one is the paranoid family annihilator who sees some kind of threat to his family, to his life. And so he takes them out rather than, it's like a mercy killing, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Rather than having them to go through whatever this is.
So all four of them in order?
Yes, all four. Self-righteous, disappointed, anomic, and paranoid.
Paranoid. Okay, folks, A, B, C, and D. Fill in your answers right now. Okay. I'm just kidding. We'll do it at the end.
All right.
I'm ready, though. I'm thinking. So, I'm taking notes.
Mm-hmm. So tonight's case is an Australian one.
Ooh, I knew it.
Sharp family murders. All right, so let's get into it. John Miles Sharp. John was born on February 28th, 1967 in Mornington in the Victorian state of Australia. And I put a map a little bit because I had no idea where this was in Australia. I had to like look it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the Victoria state is like the lower right. What is that?
I'm pretty sure. Don't take my word for this, but I'm sure the southern part of Australia is where people live, and then like the northern area, not a lot of people live there. It's more like open land. It's like the western side of or the Midwest side of the U.S.
I actually watched a quick video on that. It's kind of like that, but apparently I watched the video because I wanted to make sure I was pronouncing everything correctly, even though I thought I was, but
of course,
just to make sure. And the guy actually in the video, he said that most of Australian people live on the on the edges, like where the sea or the ocean is. And then nobody really lives in the middle. Like it's called all like wild lands and stuff like that.
Ooh, the Outback?
Yes, the Outback.
Outback Steakhouse. Yes. I don't think I've ever been to Outback Steakhouse.
I haven't.
TBH. Okay, but this, I'm looking at the picture right now. It looks, that's not the ocean, though. What would that be? Is that a lake?
It's like a bay. It's technically a suburb of Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like to the south in that little like peninsula.
Melbourne or Melbourne?
So actually.
Oh my God. Okay, folks, it's Melbourne, but she's talking about. She's saying Melbourne.
Melbourne. That's how the guy said to pronounce it. And I have heard it before, even though, yeah, it looks like you would say Melbourne, and which is how I've always said it in my head. Okay, it's Melbourne.
Listen up, Americans. It's Melbourne, okay? Born ultimatum.
No, it's Melbourne.
You say bun ultimatum? Bun supremacy?
Australians probably do.
Oh, my God.
I'm kidding. So, yeah, it's basically a suburb of Melbourne. It's, like, to the south of it. It's a very beachy, like, rural town. It's, like, right on the bay. Very small.
Sounds like the next vacation destination, folks.
Yeah, let's go to Mornington. All right. And according to the I found this really great true crime blog. It's called True Crime 365. It's pretty cool. She had a lot of information on there. His childhood was like pretty average. He wasn't very socially adept, and he actually like relied on his parents a lot in like social situations, you know.
I was just adjusting. No, that makes sense though.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it's more common than not for people to not be so sociable, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. Like he apparently had a very low emotional IQ, and apparently he didn't know how to handle stressors in life. But like, aside from this, like, he was just fine. Like, none of those things like lead you to become a killer. Like,
yeah,
most people struggle with like social situations or like social issues. Like, that's not a problem at all.
Yeah. So what, did he turn out to be an engineer of some sort?
No, actually he graduated from school and he went on to work at a bank.
It's still kind of like analytical.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I was trying to think of another profession that I could see him going towards with that, with a low emotional IQ.
Emotional IQ. Yeah. Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Yeah. He worked at the Commonwealth Bank of Australia.
So if you guys use the Commonwealth Bank of Australia, you're tied to this guy.
Yes. All right.
You have something in common with a family annihilator. Okay, I'm going to stop making him feel bad.
We have everything in common. All right. Anyways.
Are you a person?
He met at the Commonwealth Bank of Australia, actually, is where he met New Zealand-born Anna Kemp. And they were married in 1994 within a year of meeting.
Ooh.
And she was 4 years older than him. All right. So.
Cougar.
And
I'm just kidding.
Their lives like seemed pretty normal after they got married. Like they were just like living or in or around the suburbs of Melbourne, like just working, like everything seemed fine. Like
typical family annihilator stuff. Yeah. I feel like everyone's going to be paranoid now. They're going to be looking at their, their dad, be like, how's your job going? Just like all paranoid and stuff.
So in 2002, they had their first child together, a daughter that they named Gracie. And Gracie was actually born with hip dysplasia, which is a congenital abnormality in the hips. And it's when you're like the hip, like joints, like they mm-hmm. can pop out of their socket. And so she needed orthopedic therapy. And she also needed to wear a corrective harness, like on her, like around her hips for the first 3 months of her life.
Ooh, that's our first clue, people. It's our first clue.
All right. So.
I'm on to it. You know I'm on to it. I can see her face.
Due to her painful condition, she cried a lot because this was extremely painful. Like, if you move the wrong way, like, your hip pops out of place.
Okay. I'm looking at these pictures now. Mm-hmm. She looks like two or three in this picture.
Mm-hmm.
How long after they got married did you say they had her?
So they were married in 94 and they had her in 2002.
Okay. Okay. I was going to say they look so much older in that from picture one to picture two.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, is that his mom? No.
That's her. So like aside from all of that, like she cried a lot, and she was also really restless at night, and she had difficulty sleeping because of her condition. And actually I read that even after like she didn't require the harness anymore, she still had like a bunch of problems, like sticking to a sleep schedule and like eating and stuff like that and just being comfortable. And so Anna actually had to take her into like therapy a lot and get treatment for her. So it was by no means like an easy like foray into parenthood for them.
Not an easy childhood in general for her.
No.
For Gracie, that's her
name.
Yeah,
Gracie. And like what I was just getting at, many marriages suffer like just from like having a perfectly healthy baby, because like that's a lot of stress on your life. Like you don't sleep, you know, you're up all the time. And so like imagine how difficult it is to have a crying and sleep deprived baby. Deprived.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So already like you can tell that this puts an incredible strain on their marriage.
Yeah. Obviously not enough to warrant any type of murder,
no kind of violence.
But it's more stressful than just what would people deem a regular
normal parents. Yeah.
A regular parenthood or marriage with children, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. But aside from this, like they seemed pretty normal. Like their lives were just fine, like in public and in videos and like family gatherings, like everything was fine. They were the perfect family. John seemed like the classic, like doting father type is how he's described, like just absolutely normal. So sometime in 2003, about a year later, John went to a local sports shop nearby called Sport Philip Marine, and he bought a high-powered spear gun along with an extra spear using cash.
Like a fishing spear gun?
Yeah, like a it's a sport. It's called spear fishing. Yeah. It's like a, yeah.
No, I've wanted to spear fish. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's actually, I wonder how he's going to kill him. I'm just kidding. Yeah, no, I mean, just, I want to say, I watch these people on YouTube sometimes, Sailing La Vagabond, and like every time they go spear fishing, it's always made me want to try it out. Like, I don't know. I don't know how you feel about a fish. Like eating a fish that we caught. Mm-mm. She's shaking her head. She doesn't want it.
No.
It'd be cool. It'd be fun. I want to try it.
You can do it.
I'll do it. Val will just drink the salt water and
I'll just turn around.
The seaweed.
Anyways, he had... Oh, yeah. So when he bought this, he had absolutely no prior interest in spearfishing or anything of the like. Like, I don't even think he really fished.
Oh.
So this is a really odd move on his part.
Yeah. How did they get that? Like, buying in cash, I'm guessing it's got to be after the fact when they were looking around and, like, the owner was like, oh, yeah, this guy came in, bought it with cash or something.
Yeah, they probably did an investigation afterwards. I don't know how exactly they found out it was with cash, or maybe they never found a receipt or credit card something. Yeah, like credit card history.
Yeah, yeah.
So after he bought this, he also spent some time in the backyard of their Spinnaker Rise house, which is like a neighborhood-ish, practicing shooting the spear gun.
That doesn't seem very smart. How do you practice shooting the spear gun when you're not in water?
I don't know. Into a tree. That's what I imagined.
Oh, my God.
Or the ground.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's a really weird sight. Like, imagine just seeing your husband out there, like, looking at the ground or a tree and just, like, shooting a spear gun.
Yeah. I would hope it'd be, like, shooting down, because that's how you shoot fish, I guess.
Yeah.
Hopefully you don't shoot them, like, practicing shooting it in front of you. Anyways. Later that year in September, the family moved to a new house at 116 Prince Street in Mornington. Is,
Come si dice...
Hometown.
Okay.
And this would eventually be the last house that they ever lived in. So shortly after moving in...
Oh, they're forever home.
In November of 2003, when Gracie was just over a year old, Anna surprised John with a pregnancy announcement. They were not expecting, and John later says that this took him by complete surprise.
Oh, God. Wrap it up, people. We're not trying to stress this guy out anymore. God. Oh, my God. I could just imagine, like, he gets the news, like, oh, I'm pregnant, and his eyes just starts twitching. Just
stress.
And, like he's already, like, worn out from all the exhaustion of running a family. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
He probably was super stressed.
It's on him, but, yeah, so, like we're kind of hinting at, this seems to be the moment when John began to feel anger at the thought of another child and, like, his, like, seeing his future with two kids.
Yeah.
And this was probably also when he began resenting Anna.
Hey. Hey, when I got Sonny, you know, that ride home was a little bit stressful when he started meowing nonstop.
I didn't crack up at that sentence. Iris just, like, made a weird noise and, like, ran around.
Yeah, no, she was doing She's parkour playful. Earlier.
Yeah. All right. So in March of the following year, in 2004, a friend of the Sharps stayed the night with them, and later would recall that the couple seemed, like, perfectly happy, and, like, everything was normal. Nothing seemed out of place, despite the stress of the past couple of years, like with Gracie and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So everything seemed just perfectly normal. They were happy. A couple of days later, on March 21st, the family attended a family function for a family nephew, like one of their nephews, and no one at the event reported any kind of tension or arguments between the couple.
Yeah, I mean, how often do you think you'd see one of your family members arguing with their significant other.
In public, in front of.
But other than, you know, some of the few side comments or snarky comments, whatever.
Yeah. And again, that's what, like, there was no tension. Like, nothing seemed off. Like, you can usually tell when someone's, like, in a fight or in some kind of something, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Oh, why is John over there? And why is, yeah.
Yeah. Nothing of that sort. And so the last known contact between Anna and anyone but her husband was on March 22nd of that year. When she had called her healthcare provider and asked about adding her unborn child to the plan, mm-hmm. to her healthcare plan.
Money, money, money.
So, this leads us to March 23rd, 2004. John and Anna had apparently had an argument that night, though apparently, like, can't have been that severe as they retired to bed around 10 p.m. like usual.
It's 9 minutes from now.
Oh my god.
Let's hit it up. Let's try it out. 10 p.m. Per usual. God. That's when you know you've hit adulthood, is when you go to bed at 10 p.m.
Yeah. We went to bed at like 10:30 something last night, but we were exhausted. Yeah. Completely exhausted.
That's after hiking like 10 miles.
Yeah. So as Anna went to sleep, John stayed up, and he later headed downstairs to the garage to retrieve his spear gun.
Oh, a late night spear fishing run. Uh-huh. He's going to get him some breakfast.
As she slept, John loaded a spear into the spear gun, held the gun centimeters from her left temple, and fired into her skull. This actually didn't kill her immediately. And
were you fucking kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
Holy fucking shit. You know, that reminds me of that guy. There's, I don't know his name. It was like either in the 1800s or early 1900s. He was working on a railroad, and there's some, you probably,
Phineas Gage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know him.
Mm-hmm.
He like, there was some explosive, like what, dynamite or something.
Yeah. I think they used dynamite to like blow apart rocks to like build this railway or something like that.
Yeah. And so he's standing nearby one of these railroad spikes, and these things are like,
they're huge.
Yeah, they're like 3 to 6 feet. I don't know exactly how big, and I don't know, like diameter wise like 6 inches. They're huge.
Yeah,
they're huge. Like, imagine a soccer ball but a giant spear.
No, it's not that
okay
big.
Imagine a like a child's like a soccer fist. Ball yeah, a big fist, whatever. Mm. But like somehow the dynamite went off and the spear went from underneath his chin through the top of his head, and he lived.
Yeah.
And like,
but he became really abusive.
Yeah, but how could you still walk around after that? Like,
he's like, doctor, like, how do you go to assistance?
No, seriously, how do you go to the doctor for something like that?
They're like, hey, we'll take it. No, I'm fine. I'll take myself.
God,
I'm good.
A doctor in like the early 1900s is looking at this. He's like, I don't get paid enough for this.
Or like, just sleep it off.
There's not enough fun shit to do in this time to like care.
Here, have this morphine and just.
But he lived for a couple years after that.
He lived for a while, yeah.
And he I remember people saying he was a completely different person. But yeah, you should definitely search it up. There's actually like a photo of his skull, mm-hmm. next to the spike. Not the exact spike, I don't think, but a railroad spike that's similar to the one that went through his head.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it's insane.
He became very violent. And I think that's like one of the first times they're like, oh, like something this kind of behavior might have to do with like head trauma.
His brain got really smoothened out by that spike. Very smooth-brained now. Phineas and Ferb, though, what a guy. Yes. I'm just kidding.
So, did not kill her.
Oh, my God. Okay, one more thing. I'm thinking, like...
Yeah, get it all out before this next big chunk, because it gets bad.
Oh, you're telling me a spear gun bad. In the left temple isn't bad?
It gets worse.
I mean, I'm thinking, like, a spear gun... I don't know, anything that's hit by a spear gun, I'm thinking it's like flailing around like a fish. So that's what's going on through my head right now, is she's just like moving and just screaming, just like shaking uncontrollably.
I think actually she might have been fairly unconscious at this point.
I hope so.
Yeah. Because he didn't like realize that he didn't kill her until he like noticed her like shallowly breathing.
Oh my fucking God.
Yeah. And so then he loaded up his gun again and he fired again. And this time he killed her.
Like in the head again?
Yeah, same spot.
Oh, God.
Yeah. He then covered. Yeah.
I need to take a chill. Just a chill break right now.
Yeah. He then covered her dead body with towels, and he went downstairs, like just left her there, went downstairs, pulled out a sofa bed, and went to sleep. The next day, John woke up and took Gracie to her childcare center, like nothing had happened the night before. And then sometime that day, a TV repairman actually came by, and John like had to let him in and like kind of like, you know, worry about him finding out what happened. And so he let him in with Anna's body still upstairs on the bed where she had gone to sleep the night before, covered in towels. He then later headed upstairs and attempted to remove the spears lodged in her skull.
Why is this motherfucker going fishing finally? Just wanted to practice? Holy shit. Holy shit. You know, I feel like that happens a lot. Mm. How people will kill someone in their house or someone else's house or whatever. And then other people, normal, like day-to-day workers come through or friends come through. And they're like, there's a dead person upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember hearing a story from you.
A kid who threw a party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
God, I mean, that. I wonder if that repair guy knew. Like, if he heard the story. If that were
later.
Me.
Yeah.
If that were me, my mind would be blown. I'd be like, I knew I smelled something.
I don't know if they reported that to the press, though, at the time. Or yeah. For how long afterwards they kept that in. I don't know.
I mean, it's not really important to solving the case, but it's just a crazy point.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So, tried to remove them. Unsuccessful. He unscrewed the shafts, like, from the spearheads.
Yeah.
And left the spearheads in her head and buried her in a shallow grave in the backyard. Later in the day, he picked Gracie up from the childcare center and brought her home. At some point, this is, like, when he began to tell the elaborate lie about Anna suddenly leaving him for another man and that she would at some point like return later in the week to pick up Gracie. And that's the story he sticks with.
Oh my God. I scrolled down. I know where this is headed to.
Why did you?
It's the picture.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I didn't read it.
Okay. And this was the exact same story that he had told her, his mother-in-law, so Anna's mother.
Yeah.
When she, like, eventually came looking for Anna. Oh, my God. I had to burp.
Yeah, no, her mother knows something's up, because she knows her daughter's not just going to up and leave like that.
Yeah.
And not tell her.
Exactly. And then also he later returned to that same sports shop in the days after murdering his wife to purchase two more spears for his spear gun. And this time bringing Gracie with him to the store.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I lost them to some big groper. I just took it. I hit the backside of it and it just took off.
So 4 days after he had shot Anna twice with that spear gun, March 27th, 2004, he put Gracie to bed and he went on to drink copious amounts of whiskey and coke. Now,
as a celebration or I need to forget everything.
Just wait. I read a couple of sources said like whiskey and coke with a lowercase c, and then like a couple of them said with a like an uppercase coke c.
I hope it's all of the above.
So
I hope he had himself a night.
Yeah, so like,
motherfucker.
I don't know if he was drinking like whiskey and like Coca-Cola or like whiskey and like coke.
Cocaine.
Yeah. So I'm not sure. Could have been all of the above, like you said. He would later tell investigators that this was to, quote, dull his senses.
What an asshole. Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to dull my senses. I bet he had a smirk on when he said that. Whoa! Back off, kid. I've got my laptop on my lap and big old Sonny tried to jump up here. You ain't gonna mess this up. Uh-uh. I'll pet you later.
All right. So if anyone doesn't want to listen to pretty graphic descriptions of violence to a child, you can skip ahead like maybe a minute. I don't know, because it's going to get really rough. To preface this, this is when I made myself nauseous earlier. So,
reading it or seeing images?
There's no images. I'm just reading.
Oh, shit. I don't have a bag by me to pee.
And that's, yeah, and I don't use, that never happens. Anyways, all right. So after he was pretty inebriated, he went to the garage one last time, loaded a spear into a spear gun, and headed upstairs to Gracie's room. He walked up to a sleeping 20-month-old toddler in her crib and shot the spear into her temple. Again, for whatever reason, the spear didn't penetrate her skull, and Gracie, now awake and in horrendous pain, began screaming and crying loudly. Panicked, John went to retrieve the two headless spears that he had pulled out of Anna's skull, her mother's skull, and returned, shooting both into Gracie's head. These two also failed to kill her. Finally, John pulled the first spear out of Gracie's head, shot her for the fourth time, and this time killed her.
Oh my god. Holy shit.
I can't, I don't try to picture it because I can't.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. The following day, he removed the spears from his daughter's head, not bearing to look at her. Apparently, he, like, put a towel over her.
What fucking smooth brain. God.
That's a compliment to someone like him.
What a baby.
He wrapped her head, or he wrapped... wrapped her body in tarpaulin, which I didn't know what that was. It's like a waterproof, like, canvas type of thing.
Oh, thank God. He doesn't want the water to get to her.
And then he placed her body in the trunk of his car and drove to the Mornington Refuse Transfer Station, which is like a landfill, basically, and disposing of her, the spear gun, and some of her toys and clothes there.
What an idiot. I'm sorry, but just throwing something into a landfill doesn't get rid of it.
Yeah.
What an idiot, for one, killing his family. Two, throwing it in the dump.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. I can't think straight right now. I'm still thinking of what he did to Gracie. Know.
That's why I'm just trying to get...
Let's move on.
I'm trying. I can't, like, remain there. Anyways, on March 29th, so I think this is, like, 2 days after this, He purchased more tarpaulin, a roll of duct tape, and an electric chainsaw at a local Bunnings Warehouse hardware store. The next day, John proceeded to dig Anna up from her shallow grave, dismember her into three pieces with the chainsaw.
In what way? In what way do you dismember a human being in three separate ways?
Torso, head. I don't know.
What the
fuck? I don't know what the point of that would... Maybe... I don't... Ugh. Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Is this guy writing all this shit down and that's how we know all this? Don't tell me. Don't tell me. Let's just keep going.
Anyways. I'll tell you later. Yeah. This will all... Yeah. Be explained. And then he also dumps her body in waste collection bins in the same place as he did Gracie, in that same landfill.
Okay. Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah, like the garbage bins that we get, like, and like people that live in houses.
They just put her body in there?
In three pieces.
In bins. What the fuck? This guy's begging to get caught.
He reportedly told the attendant at the refuse station, "I have a bootload of hard waste."
Okay.
It's jackass. Australian.
Jackass.
Yeah. That very same day, he sent a forged email to his mother-in-law. From Anna's email account, from her email, claiming to be Anna, telling her that she had run away to start a new life and was with another man, alive and well. While John probably intended for, like, this email to ease their minds, it did exactly the opposite.
Yeah, I'm sure that her mom knows how she writes emails, and that does not look...
That never works.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, whenever somebody tries to do this shit, like, some acquaintance from, like, 20 years ago is like, yeah, no, she would never say that. Like, it's always...
Oh, my God, Anna? Oh, my God, no. She doesn't really use periods too often. She always ends with exclamation points. This is totally her husband. He totally killed her.
Yeah, so that very same day, Anna's mother reports her missing to New Zealand
Thank
police.
Thank you, Anna's mother. Bless yeah. your heart.
Yes. So... In the following 3 months after the murders, John kept up the charade that his wife and child had abandoned him.
Yep, there's the picture I saw.
Mm-hmm. Going on TV stations, like crying and begging for them to return to him, and if anyone knows their whereabouts, to contact the police. In these appearances, he's quoted as saying, quote, Anna, our marriage may be over, but I still love you, and you are the mother of our beautiful daughter, Gracie, whom we both adore more than anyone else.
How old do you say that through your teeth?
I don't know.
How?
And you know he has to be thinking of exactly what he did to them during that.
I hope... I don't know if he's still alive. I know we'll figure it out. But I hope every day he sees the images of them and just... I don't care what he feels. But he needs to remember exactly what he did.
Yeah.
Because he's a piece of shit.
And he tried to not remember because he... Especially with Gracie, you know,
he
tried
he
to
covered
get
her face up.
Yeah, and he drank and did like he tried to make himself forget or like tried to be out of his
oh
senses.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He's also quoted as saying, anyone that knows me knows I gave 100% for my daughter and my marriage.
Lies.
Yeah, that's just lies. To infuriate anyone else listening to this shit even more.
Oh my God, I want to go punch him. I'm going to go punch his headstone if he's dead. I can't wait to find out where this guy is.
When interviewed by the police, he kept, again, to the same story that she had left him and was somewhere in Chelsea, which is a suburb of Melbourne, and denied any involvement or knowledge of her disappearance. And so the police in Mornington were actually contacted by the New Zealand police when... Anna's mother had reported her missing. So they were like, yeah. Hey, like, this girl's missing. Like, she's from New Zealand. Like, she went missing in your town. Like, can you investigate this?
Right.
And that's when they contacted him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Imagine that being your world. Like, living in Australia and New Zealand around that area. Thailand. Oh, I'm jealous. I'm jealous of John. I'm just kidding.
Oh my God.
It's a joke, people. It's a really bad joke.
But again, like relating to your point, like if Anna's mother hadn't reported her missing, this might have been pushed off for even longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bless your heart, Anna's mom.
Yes.
Again.
He even went so far to deceive her family as arranging for flowers to be delivered to her mother, to Anna's mother, on her birthday in Anna's name. So it seemed like Anna sent flowers to her mother on her birthday.
I feel like that's easily traceable. Because wouldn't he have to put in that order?
Maybe use cash.
Oh, my God.
But they found out that he did it, so he...
What a fucking idiot.
Like, they must have found out somehow, or either he told them or something. I'm not sure exactly about the flowers detail.
Are you looking at the picture with him crying?
So that's
He's
the picture.
He's got a real punchable face.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
So that's the picture that of one of the many interviews that he did with TV. Like, I saw... Like, there's a quick documentary about it on YouTube that I watched a little bit of. And, like, this scene was in there. Like, there's video of this whole, like, everything.
Yeah.
And there's, like... There's maybe like 20-25 like reporters there, like, and like in their little
it must
I'm assuming
be the
that's
big, I mean it, like this isn't a very big town, right? Like
no,
you said.
It's so like
this,
small rural. Yeah,
this is big news.
And he
this
yeah
is where
and
all
he,
the hits are coming from.
Yeah, and he's like saying the story, like he's this victim, like his wife left him, like they're now missing, like where's my wife and daughter, like, you know, that kind of stuff.
What a sob story.
Yeah, and that's his dad right there in that picture.
Oh my
Gracie's,
God,
with Gracie's picture, and of course he
God.
Knew nothing about it. Obviously,
this like, guy's normal. Yeah. This guy's completely normal, and he, I'm sure nowadays he's probably thinking like, what the fuck did I just raise, or
yeah.
how did this become?
How? Yeah.
How did my son become this? Because, God, he has
right
a
now,
real punchable face. I'm telling you.
Because like his father, you've got to be thinking like,
he's just a. Sweet old man.
He thinks his like son was abandoned, like he's missing his daughter, like his grandchild, like they don't know where she is.
How do you lie in front of your parents like that?
Yeah.
After what you did, like, oh my God.
And I watched the little part of that documentary, and maybe we can watch it afterwards or something, because there's I don't remember his name, but he's like an expert in like speech patterns or something like that. Like he basically analyzes people, and he looked through it. Like when I was looking at that, I was like, oh God, this dude, like he's really laying it on thick. Like you can't tell that he's lying, but something's off. Like he just doesn't seem sad. And the guy even said that like his emotions are misplaced. Like it seems wrong.
Seems forced.
Yeah. Like something, like he's not sad about what he's talking about. He's sad about something else.
Yeah, he couldn't make it in Hollywood. Sorry to tell you people.
So now we're in June. Okay. This all happened in March.
March, April, May, June, March. So 3 months later.
3 months later.
Basically. I did it. I had to use my fingers, but I did it.
So on the 10th of June, police, who are still investigating the sudden disappearance of Anna and Gracie, interviewed John again. Maintaining a story as the victim, like I said, he was released. Sometime after this interview, this is when things really started to fall apart.
Good.
Yes. Surveillance was obtained by the police of John disposing of what looked like incriminating evidence in a garbage bin. And police also learned that John had disposed of the mattresses a few days after Anna's disappearance and purchased like brand new ones.
Idiot.
And Anna's ATM card and cell phone was found hidden in a Mornington toilet block after footage showed John visiting that same block right before.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's an instant. You're guilty. What the fuck?
Yeah. So they went and searched.
This guy is the stupidest motherfucker out on the...
Yeah. I don't know why he was hiding it.
Yeah. I mean, okay. One, why is he hiding it? And two, you live next to the ocean. You could literally just walk 10 feet and throw it into the ocean.
I mean, it's good for us. He's such an idiot because.
Oh, my God. Smooth brain to the max.
Yeah.
Thank God, because he definitely got caught. Yeah. I know that for sure.
So.
Well, no shit. We're talking about a story. Oh, my God. Whatever. I know he got caught. I'm putting money on it.
So they saw him at that toilet block, and then they found her ATM card and her phone right there.
Wait, hold up. What's a toilet block?
I don't know.
I feel like that's like a toilet, like a public restroom.
Maybe,
and, like,
yeah.
You lift up the toilet and you put in the water or whatever that is.
Yeah, like when I looked up toilet block, because I looked it up, I literally had to be like, what is a toilet block?
It's like a block party where people like sit on a toilet and start chatting.
No, so the search like pulled up. There's like a toilet. There's a thing called a toilet block that you can put on kind of like the rim where you put like cleaning stuff and all that kind of stuff. But I think in this case, it's probably their public restrooms or like maybe porta potties or something.
Okay. But he disposed of it in a public place where people can find it.
Yes. Either way. Public place.
Okay. So a toilet block is like when you're at like a park, they have restrooms there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like a little house.
Yeah, with
it's like where
sense.
You took, where you took your dump. No, I'm just kidding. where you used the restroom after a hike.
Or like a rest stop or something. Like something.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's just toilets. It's like a little house with toilets.
Gotcha.
I'm glad we can explain what a toilet block is.
Yes. Hey, we're from the U.S. We don't have those here.
No, we literally do. I've used one plenty
but
of times.
But we don't call it. I've never heard someone say toilet block.
Yeah, we just call them the restroom. Yeah. You know? Come on, guys. Down, you people down under. Come on. Is that discriminatory?
So
saying down under. Okay, I'm done.
When police. Apparently, they don't say that there at all.
Oh, my God.
That's just us Americans. Are you American?
Ooh, I see a word below. Starts with an S, ends with a LUT.
Stop reading.
Okay, I'm done.
When police found both Anna and Gracie's blood in the house, like when they finally searched his house and found that, John was formally arrested and charged for the murder of his wife and daughter on June 22nd. Eventually.
I was going to say clap. Slow claps.
Yes. Eventually, after like a couple of interviews, he offered a full confession of his crimes. Like he fully confessed.
Good.
And actually, what you were saying before, I didn't write it down, but I remember reading that they also had found notes, like, that he had placed in, like, different parts, like, either in that public restroom or, like, just, like, they found notes, basically, of his, and he detailed, like, his story, like, his side of the story, like, what he's gonna tell, like, his plan for after, pretty much.
What is this guy doing? What the fuck? He's, like... leaving clues for Dora the Explorer to find.
It's like, let me just put this under the pillow. They'll never find it here.
Here, if I leave this in a public spot, no one's going to find it, even though a lot of people have to use the restroom.
So, after the full confession, so he basically told police that he had killed his wife because she was, quote, controlling and moody, and that they had an unhappy marriage, and that he had initially planned on taking care of Gracie on his own. However, like, he later confessed, kind of changed his story, that he knew he had to kill Gracie as well after he had killed Anna. So, like, he, like, those couple of days after he killed Anna, he was just getting ready to kill Gracie.
Well, yeah. He had to get super fucked up to do it.
Yeah.
And he couldn't do it right. He took him 4 fucking tries.
Yeah.
God damn, dude. It's not like you're trying to shoot a paper into a little, like, into your trash can at work.
Oh,
doesn't
God.
Take that many tries to get it
oh
in.
Oh, my God, stop.
What?
You're talking about shooting a spear into it.
Okay, you're thinking about that. I'm thinking about people at work, like, oh, Kobe, and missing it. Like,
so, yeah, after he confessed that, he also admitted to the police that he had been fantasizing and planning on killing Anna for months leading up to the act, which is not that surprising at all.
Fantasizing.
Yeah.
Do you think he used that word, or do you think the police?
I don't know. I saw it written. I can't imagine he used it, but I'm sure he basically said that he had been thinking about it, like, like, continuously, consciously for a while.
Oh, my God. What's one of your fantasies, Val? Is it shooting a spear gun through my head when I sleep?
No.
Don't worry, guys. Val's the sweetest. She would never. At least I hope.
He revealed to the police where he had disposed of his wife and daughter's bodies. And even after that, it took 3 months for the police to locate their remains. Because this was a huge landfill.
Yeah.
So it's not something, like, even though he probably told him, like, this is where I, like, this, like, exactly here, they took him 3 months to find it, which is insane.
It's a lot of trash to pile up.
Yeah. When asked why he had killed Gracie, he responded, "The child belongs with the mother."
Ah, family man.
Yes.
Okay.
So, not long after this confession, actually some family letters revealed that John had a history of sexually abusing children.
What?
And the reason for this double murder may have been not because he was, like, because Anna was moody or whatever.
Definitely not.
But may have been because Anna had found out about his potential sexual abuse of Gracie. And this was speculation. This was speculation by some people, like, family or whoever. Like, it's not founded, like, nobody ever, like, confirms this, but
Val wrote parentheses speculation exclamation point end parentheses.
Yeah, because there's nothing to suggest that he had been, there's nothing to suggest he hadn't been. It's certainly possible, but again, we just don't know. They could have been arguing that night about that. They were arguing. They could have been arguing about, I don't know, regular stuff. Either way,
well, there's nothing other than regular stuff that you could be arguing about. Well, hold up, yeah, never mind. The speculation.
Yeah. I mean, either way, personally, I don't know how much emphasis to put on this point, but I felt I had to include it because it is something that people
the family
have
members were saying it. Which
yeah,
is
yeah, like there is evidence to it. And I'm not disproving that. I think there's something going on way more than just that, if it had been. I think that was just the person he was. I don't think, like, Anna just discovering that led to that. I think he knew that he was planning on doing it.
Yeah.
So the family members that had talked about this had said that John was caught molesting children of friends of, like, the family nearly 2 decades before the murders. And reportedly, one girl who had been abused by John for like 2 years had later confronted him about this when she was an adult. And he had apparently, quote unquote, said that she was a, quote, slut who deserved it.
Oh. This guy's a fucking creep. And a freakazoid.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
So it's confirmed because...
I would assume so. I don't know who would come forward and lie about that. Like, I'm sure
In this case, the only way to know is if John outright says it. That's the only way to 100% know. But in most of these cases, you believe the woman.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there's no one coming forward and, like, making this up. Like, who would... Yeah. Why would you... What? That's such a crazy thing to... Yeah. Who would make that up? Like, and what family member would, like, make up some girl that he had been molesting and, like, who approached him? Like, that's not... No, that's not something that goes through someone's head.
Yeah. I'm excited to see what happened to this guy. To hear what happened to him.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
So, during his trial... It's not too exciting, but John, who is nicknamed the Mornington Monster, pled guilty to both murders, and he was sentenced to life, to 2 counts of life, with a minimum non-parole sentence for 33 years, and he remains in protective custody to this day due to threats to his life made by fellow inmates. And John Sharp, this Mornington Monster, will be eligible for parole in 2037.
How old is he again?
Right now?
Yeah.
50s,
60s?
I don't know. He was born in 67.
Oh. So he's 52.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, my parents were born in 67.
So, yeah.
My mom had... Exactly. My mom had me when she was 29, and we're one day apart, so she's, like, always 30 years older than me, pretty much.
Yep.
Boom. Quick maths.
Quick maths.
Okay, so, yeah. So 52. He could... Definitely still be alive.
Oh, yeah.
Unless he gets COVID. Oh, yeah. Fingers crossed.
No, he's not old at all yet.
Wait, I thought... Okay. Pled guilty. Okay. To life?
He was sentenced to life.
Yeah.
2 counts of life. But...
He's eligible for parole in...
In 33 years after the start of his sentence.
Okay.
So, like... Yeah, I get, like, I don't know how the legal system in Australia works, but I'm pretty sure I've heard in other countries they don't do just life without parole. You're always eligible after a certain amount of time for parole, so this is probably that kind of a case, but I can't imagine he would get paroled.
Yeah.
I mean, you never know, but I can't imagine.
I mean, fingers crossed the worst happens to this guy.
Or not, or he lives out his life, which I hope he does. In custody.
I'm a cynic and you're an angel.
No, I want him to suffer for the rest of his life.
I hope he does too.
Oh, I don't want him to die and get it over with.
I'm glad we're on the same page. I hope he's in chains and getting tortured every day. No, I'm just kidding.
No.
I hope he's the next Reek.
I hope he has all the time in the world to think about what he did.
It'd be cool if we could put those types of people into just a tiny little cell block. With, like, a hole.
No.
Okay, I'm done. I'm done.
No, that's cruel and unusual punishment.
Okay.
And it's illegal.
Okay, well, maybe. No, I'm just kidding.
No.
I'm not going to.
That's torture.
I'm not going to dig myself a hole
Solitary
here.
Solitary confinement should not
further. Every episode, I dig myself at least a 3-foot hole. I can still get out of it, but once I dig myself, like, a 7-foot hole, I'm done.
So, that's. Pretty much all we know about John Sharp. That's pretty much the end of his story, unless something else comes out since. And meanwhile, Anna and Gracie were buried together in Green Park Cemetery in Dunedin, New Zealand.
Did you pronounce that right on the first try?
I don't know. I didn't look it up. I'm pretty sure. Ooh. I don't actually know how it was pronounced. I bet I said it wrong. But anyways, in New Zealand. And Gracie's birth and death certificates have... been changed to say father listed as unknown.
Good.
And that is the chilling, nauseating story of the Sharp family murders.
Bravo. Oh, wait. I was going to say, I'm saying bravo to you for that. Okay. Uh-huh. We have to. Okay, class, are you ready? What type of family? What is it?
Annihilator. Familicide or family annihilator.
What type of family annihilator is he? Val, let's hear the four again.
So the four, let me read
just
it.
Real quick. No definition. We got it.
Yeah. So it's a self-righteous, disappointed, anomic, and paranoid.
Okay. We can mark off paranoid, I'm mm-hmm. pretty sure. We can mark off, oh my God. Righteous? It's not that, is it? It's up to you. Is it righteous?
Well, I don't know what it is, but I know what I think it is.
Okay, I think we can mark off righteous. You're giving me a look, though. Oh my God.
Give me your best guess, or give me your answer.
Oh my God, I'm like reading through all of this. Oh shit. I'm giving up. Is it it's not a nomic, is it?
I personally don't think so, because I don't see where he experienced some kind of downfall with his wealth or success or like.
Oh, does it have to do with wealth or success?
It's some kind of extension of personal success. Yourself, yeah, that you see, you place like kind of a value on them.
I was stressing out. I mean, okay, what do you think it is?
I mean, I think it's self-righteous, because you have that point where he started seeing Anna as the source of his problems. Like, she was having another kid. She gave him Gracie, who was, you know, disabled. Like, she had hip. Like, he was seeing Anna as the source of problems in his life.
Okay, fine. You have the better guess. What? God damn it.
Only because I was researching it for a while.
I was stressing out. I was like trying to find all of them and read the description.
Well, I don't think it's paranoid, because nothing in his life led to that. Again, same as anomic. Nothing happened really that like set him off, except for the pregnancy thing. But again, I think that points to Anna being in his life. Like, he saw her as his.
Yeah. I mean, with him having Gracie and her being disabled, just going through all of that stress, I'm sure hearing that another kid was on the way, he's like, if it's even the same or even worse.
Either way, he was becoming, this isn't my life. This is not what I want.
And he just decided to do the absolute opposite of what you should do.
Just the absolute worst thing you could possibly do to anyone else. Like your family. I
think murder's the worst thing you could do to anyone.
Yeah. Ever. But especially your family, your child, your 20-month-old. She wasn't even 2 years old.
Yeah. And he had to get super fucked up to do it. Okay. I don't want to talk about this guy anymore. Yeah. Holy shit. I'm glad that he's in jail. I'm glad he's alive. No, I agree with you that these people should live their lives knowing what they did, feeling regret, and just living as long as possible, because I don't want him to have any joy. And I want him to live in a little block.
And he's in protective custody, so it's not like he's like, you know, working a job in prison, taking classes, which I think is a good thing for the most part. But I think you gotta kind of do your time when you're a piece of shit person who kills your fucking child and your wife.
Yeah.
With a spear gun.
I wonder if he's more protected than, what? Oh God, I can never pronounce her name. Ghislaine.
Ghislaine.
Yeah.
I don't know.
She's got COVID.
Jeffrey was protected.
Fucking wild. We'll have to get back onto him soon.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed the episode.
Yep.
We made things easier for everyone, for us and you. You can just go to our website, www.rawcrimespodcast.com. You can find everything you need to know. We don't have to keep saying, like, you can catch us at these handles. Just go to rawcrimespodcast.com.
But meanwhile, that's the same as our Twitter, right? Rawcrimespod. And then Instagram is rawcrimespodcast.
Yeah.
Yes.
So if you guys want to send us any of your stories, any hometown stories, any stories that you want to hear, even if they're well-known, just let us know.
Any feedback, anything. We'd appreciate it all. But yeah, I think that's probably where we're going to wrap it up for tonight. And
we'll
be back with a mini, hopefully sometime soon. And we'll get started working on our next case, which I'm very excited for.
Ooh.
Yes.
I am too. All right. Bye.
Bye.